Hello and welcome back to the Gridiron Gentlemen podcast. We are a week removed from the draft, and after catching up on our sleep, me and James are prepared now. Now the dust has settled. We had a little look at the draft picks to go through and just have a chat about the draft in general. We've obviously talked about it a bit before. You'll have heard pretty much every episode the day that the Lemon draft came out, thanks to a number of things. But anyway, we're going to move on from that. And we're going to talk about, whether teams got better, whether teams got worse, although it is actually very rare for teams to get worse by adding players. But what teams we think made mistakes. And we got a few questions that we want to answer as well that have come up on the Discord. Just general draft chit-chat, James. I think that's what we're going to do.
I'm going to quote Alan Partridge here. We're going to be equidistant between chit-chat and analysis.
There you go. I think that's the way forward. Have we spoken since the Lamar Jackson contract happened?
Nope.
Lamar Jackson signed a new contract is the long and short of it. He made a ton of money, making a ton of guaranteed money. And everyone that was criticizing him for being his own agent has gone strangely quiet. So it's worked out pretty well for Lamar Jackson, who has completely deserved to be the next highest paid quarterback, because that's how this works.
Yeah, it's amazing how being extremely talented mitigates the damage a lack of agent has to a player.
Don't get me wrong. If you're rubbish, get an agent.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Rob Havenstein, you need an agent, dude.
Yeah, but if you're Lamar Jackson...
That's just an example. It's nothing personal against Havenstein, just an example.
If you're Lamar Jackson, you are going to become a multimillionaire at some point.
Yeah,
so, you know,
it's
going to
happen.
Yeah. It'll be fine. So that happened. There's not really much to add to that. The Baltimore Ravens signed him back, which seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah. It all happened draft week, as we knew it all would.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like they got like a particular discount, because they basically, the rest of the league seems to blackball him by not putting any interest in signing him. It seems like they still signed him for a reasonable amount. People complaining that, well, this was not what he asked for. I clearly don't understand how negotiations work. And it's just one of those things, you know. He's signed. He's made an absolute fortune. He's still young. Probably has a chance to sign another contract on top of this one as well.
Yep.
And just the grand scheme of things, if you're a top 5 to top 10 quarterback, you're always going to, when you sign a contract, you're always going to be the next highest paid player. So Patrick Mahomes' contract now, which seemed astronomical at the time, now seems reasonable.
Yep.
So, yeah. I think that's about it news-wise, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the news. That's the news, apart from obviously the draft inferno.
Yeah, and people turning up to training camps. Or not training camps. People turning up to facilities in slow motion to music. That's happened a lot, I've noticed.
Yes.
Where do we want to start then?
Should we start, I think, with the first massive shock of Thursday?
Yeah.
Which was the Houston Texans. They shocked us twice in quick succession. So first of all, they went and picked the quarterback that everybody thought that the team at number 2 would pick in January.
Yeah.
So tick. The mock that was done in January was right. It's just the team would have been different.
Yeah.
Or maybe the same, depending on what kind of trade you predicted. So they picked CJ Stroud. That's not a pick I have a problem with. It's absolutely fine. I like it. I mean, you know, he's worth being picked there. He's and the Texans, had they not drafted a quarterback, I'm fairly certain there would have been rioting on the streets. What's odd is that they picked their quarterback and then set fire to a ton of draft capital to go back up to 3 and get Will Anderson. Now, I have a theory that ownership potentially would not tolerate the concept of them not drafting a quarterback, but also at the same time, they wanted to give D'Amico Ryan's oh guy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick Caserio is still the GM there, right?
Yes, but I get the sense that potentially ownership, potentially McNair probably wanted to go Will Anderson and get loads of capital, but I get the sense that somebody put their foot down and said, no, you're taking the quarterback at two. Anything else you do after that is up to you.
So my thought is this. Does Nick Caserio think that he might not be there next season? So why not use as much draft capital as possible to just be like,
yeah,
try and win and try and keep yourself in a job for another year? This happens over and over again when you don't replace your GM at the same time as you're replacing your head coach.
Yeah, so it's all a bit skewed because obviously you're thinking now, but your coach is thinking, well, I've got 3 or 4 years, maybe two or three. So there is that disconnect there, but I also get the sense that ownership did intervene there. I think on the face of it, if you ignore what they gave up, I mean, it was a brilliant, brilliant draft because their first two picks are absolute.
The home runs.
You know, they're home runs. I mean, you know, even if they don't pan out, you can say, well, we got the best quarterback we could possibly have got at two.
Yeah.
And we got the best possible defensive player, if you count red flags, that we could have got at three.
Yeah.
So it is win-win. And even if it doesn't pan out, you can't fault that process. Although if it doesn't pan out, you can fault the process of what they gave up.
100%. And especially when the draft rolls around next year and the Arizona Cardinals are potentially picking number one, number two.
And then they go take Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr.
And completely change their team. Like, they're changing their team at the expense. I suppose one way of looking at it is that the Houston Texans decided that they wanted to completely change their team this year. The difference is the Arizona Cardinals haven't really given up anything.
No.
The Arizona Cardinals were quite happy getting what they got. They moved back up to six, didn't they? Did I make that one up?
Yeah.
It's been a week now, yeah. Which is fine. I like that move. To ensure they got their guy.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Fine. I think the Houston Texans aren't in a position to make this kind of move because they've got too many needs still on their team. I think despite this, though, they actually still had a reasonably good draft, weirdly.
I think what they picked, the value was pretty much on the money, and what they drafted was absolutely fine. I think if you look at picks later on, let me just put them back up in front of me.
So Juice Scruggs was the second round.
Yeah, I mean,
fine.
Yeah.
Tank Dell, the third round.
I mean, he was probably the wide receiver I felt the most sort of bullish about in the whole process. The guy who I thought, you know, if he goes to the right team in the right situation, could be highly productive. And I think I like him for the Texans, to be honest. I think he's a body type that he fits in quite well with as a contrast to like a Nico Collins, who at the moment would be their de facto receiver one. They're different body types, and I think he could potentially be somebody who is like a security blanket, a separator underneath, someone with also speed to burn deep as well. He's not a big guy, he's quite small. But he's shifty and he's really, really good in the red zone. And for a small guy, he's probably one of the best contested catch players in the entire process. So,
I question that the Texans weren't a Will Anderson away from winning a Super Bowl. That's my biggest argument, anyway. And as a result, it's an okay team. It's definitely better than it was last year. Like you look at where they've added players in free agency, where they've added players in the draft. Nico Collins, John Metchie, Robert Woods, and Tank Dell. It's an interesting group. And obviously we're hoping the best.
They've also got Dalton Schultz, haven't they, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously we're hoping the best for John Metchie as well. Like, it would be amazing to see him do really well. But A lot riding on Nico Collins there, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's okay. He's an okay Z receiver, but he's not the guy who's going to be your number one. And nor is Tank Dell, nor is Robert Woods anymore. But at the same time, I think they're going to build an offense based on the running game. I think Robert Woods is a great addition as a guy who's very good as a specialist
Yeah,
run
field
blocking
stretcher.
receiver.
Right, as well. He's also the offensive line's okay. Larry Tunsil's obviously still like the probably the most talented player on the team. But they've got Shaq Mason, Titus Howard as well. Like it's okay. It's not mind blowing. The defense, I think, is lacking. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
The offensive line is actually it's probably the best offensive line situation that any of these quarterbacks can walk into.
Potentially, yeah.
Not saying much, but
No.
there you go.
No, that's a very good point. Defense is interesting. The secondary stands a chance of actually being quite good, but then everything else is pretty average except for Will Anderson.
And even then, you're still banking on a rookie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's always a high variance
That's.
outcomes, even with like blue chip ones.
Yeah.
It's,
I just hope
yeah.
Will Anderson is going to be a better player than Marvin Harrison and whatever edge rusher was available at 12. Marvin Harrison Jr. and whatever edge rusher was available at 12.
I think you can still justify if both are good to very good players. The franchise for like 6 or 7 years, I think it's still kind of justified.
What,
But yeah, you'd always
Stroud and
be comparing
Anderson?
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you'd
Yeah.
still always be comparing them. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that was my first sort of big surprise. I thought Anthony Richardson to the Colts before it actually happened, I wasn't necessarily sure that that would be a pick that would have occurred. I actually kind of saw him maybe going first overall to Carolina, but he's kind of, I like the pick more and more the more I think about it.
Yeah.
I do
The
like it.
Colts put together just an absolute team of burners as well.
Yeah.
Like it's all quick guys on this Indianapolis Colts team.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean
Finally.
they stand a chance of they stand I don't love their draft, but at the same time I've not loved their draft before and I've not loved their rosters before. And it's worked out reasonably well. And I do think Chris Ballard deserves some credit for that.
No, he does. Yes.
Anthony Richardson's obviously like the key factor here. Is if he comes in and just absolutely lights it up, I mean, all bets are off.
No, absolutely. It was very strange, though, sort of like the reaction to the Anthony Richardson pick. It was quite a muted kind of press conference, which tells me that maybe, again, maybe like the Texans, that perhaps somebody put their foot down. I really, really liked what they did in rounds 2 and 3 as well, actually. I think Julius Brents is like a very interesting sort of specimen who, 6'3", 34-inch arms, 42-inch vertical, and it's just like raw physical tools for him to be this long physical corner. So he's an interesting guy, and certainly somebody who I thought from watching the Senior Bowl practices and Senior Bowl game, thought he's somebody who showed more than he did on film.
Yeah.
And I really like them getting Josh Downs at pick 79. So like he is hashtag small. And he probably is a slot only guy, but he's very good at getting open. He's a decent contested catch player. He's 13 of 18 contested targets and just has generated a ton of yardage and production in that sort of UNC offense. So he's interesting.
Yeah,
And
I
then,
quite like that pick for a number of reasons. One of the other ones being that they had no one outside their top three receivers until they picked him.
oh, God, yeah.
Even
Oh,
Isaiah
God, yeah.
McKenzie's a bit of a stretch, if I'm honest with you, but.
Yeah. Adding some juice there. And then they got Adetomiwa Adebowale as well.
Yeah.
He's like and he was good value at pick 110. So I thought it was a decent draft actually, and like everybody they got was decent value. I mean, even Daniel Scott from Cal, that's a good value pick to get him at pick 158. And just, I don't have a massive problem with what they did at all. Every pick that they had was kind of either made sense for the value. It's just the one thing that they didn't do in terms of like offensive line. They didn't pick an offensive lineman until round four.
Yeah.
And that's Blake Freeland, BYU. So it's like,
I'm guessing, what can you do? Yeah. Like, your first round pick's going on a quarterback.
By the time you pick in round two, there's not the value there for a tackle.
Yeah.
And I mean, guard is not necessarily a massive need.
No, as long
but
as,
I think,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think at some point they needed to have dealt with the offensive line.
Yeah.
Whether it draft or free agency, it just didn't really seem to happen. I do wonder whether they're planning on mitigating that with Anthony Richardson just being this just absolute physical freak.
I think that's really going to help, and I think he will play early.
Yeah, I do as well. I think he might start.
I would be very surprised if he didn't.
Yeah, because, I mean, Gardner Minshew's fine, but like when you've got just this absolute specimen like sitting on the bench that can change a game at a moment, I think you got to roll with it.
No. I wholeheartedly, absolutely, that reservation concur.
Get him on the field. If he loses eight games but gets better in those eight games, who cares?
Yeah, and you know, it'll be Jalen Hurts all over again. It's like he'll dictate coverages, the fact that he is that 11th skill position player, that 11th runner, that extra man the defense has to account for. And that, you know, even if it looks like Justin Fields last season, that's still something.
But that's what Jalen Hurts' previous season kind of looked like anyway. Like,
exactly.
Shane Steichen knows what he's doing with this. It is.
Yep.
Do you remember like a couple of seasons ago when we were like, the Eagles just refused to run the ball? And it just felt like he was just trial by fire. Jalen Hurts, you're going to go in, you're going to sling the ball.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden just started introducing these running schemes into it. The team started getting better and better and better. And now Jalen Hurts is one of the top quarterbacks in the league. It feels like that is a decent opportunity for Anthony Richardson to actually succeed here. So yeah, really, really interesting. I personally, I think that's the right move. If he was there at four, then I think you've got to take him.
So, in the most vomit-inducing turn of the night, two of my favorite decisions made on draft night were made by the Seahawks. Getting your cojones out and slapping them on the table and saying, you know what, we're just going to pick Devon Witherspoon at five. That was one of my favorite things they could have done. That's one of the best things I think they could have done. He's like, they haven't picked a corner in the first round in, oh God, it's nearly 20 years. And for them to pick him, if we had a time machine.
Yeah.
You could stick him in those 2012, 2013, 2014 Seahawks defenses, and he'd be the kind of personality that would just fit right in.
Yeah.
He nasty. I think they already managed to get themselves two decent corners last year.
Yeah. Like their secondaries look pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Jamal Adams might be the outlier, to be honest with you.
The weak link.
Yeah, Quandre Diggs pretty good.
Yeah, and then you look at Devon Witherspoon is like, in terms of like attitude and the way he plays corner, is the player you hope Jamal Adams would be in terms of temperament and approach.
They also picked up Julian Love, which I quite like as well.
They're
so
building
like
something.
Yeah, they're building from the secondary as well, by the looks of things. Like. And then, Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen had a really good season last year. So,
Then they go get Jackson Smith and Jigba as well at 20. And it's like, you got the best receiver in the draft and the best corner.
Yeah, they went out and they went right. So where do we want to improve? Receiver and corner. Okay, so if we can get the best receiver and the best corner, that's a draft win, right? And they did that. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba will complement Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf really, really nicely as well. It's a great landing spot.
It's a superb fit. And just like he's going to be someone that is going to be. He's probably going to be the guy that's more consistently targeted than any of them in a couple of years, probably.
Yeah.
He'll be the one that gets 80, 90 catches a season. And obviously, Tyler Lockett will be retired by then because he's in wide receiver years. He's 1,000 years old. then pick 52, they got Zach Charbonnet, who, you know, I think it was my RB4. He's not a bad player. He's a good player. And, you know, gives some depth for running back rooms that didn't need running backs, but got one anyway. But there you go. But they added a good one. I like the addition of Derek Hall at Auburn. It's a little bit high, maybe, but you know, you picked him with the pick you got from Denver, so it's kind of a freebie. And you know, he's been one of the most productive pass rushers in the SEC in the last three seasons. So
I like the fact that the Seahawks are now going, holy shit, we can draft. Like, why haven't we always done this?
I mean, you know, or even if just one or two of these guys pan out, they've had a year where they're just absolute tear.
Well, last year's draft class is now looking even better than ever, like for the Seahawks. Like Charles Cross, Abraham Lucas, Tariq Woolen, Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid on his own.
And I just really like it. And then in that pick 237, they've got Kenny McIntosh from Georgia. And that's actually a really, really, really good place to pick a Kenny McIntosh, because while he's not one of the elite prospects in this class, he's certainly better than a seventh round grade. So that was good too. I really like that.
Yeah.
A lot of discussion about the Lions. I didn't really have that much of a problem with Jahmyr Gibbs at 12. Although, you know, I'm not convinced he wouldn't have been gone where you would originally have been picked at 18. Picking at 18 after you picked at 6.
My favourite one is that someone's redone the Detroit Lions draft and put the picks in different positions, and all of a sudden it looks a lot better.
Well, it does, and I'll get to that in a second. Because actually, their first round picks really, really blew my mind. In terms of like value, Jahmyr Gibbs not so much, but picking Jack Campbell at 14, I have a feeling he would have been there 25 picks later.
Well, I think Jahmyr Gibbs would have been as well, for that matter. While we're at it,
I mean, Gibbs might not have made it past. I don't think he would have made it past the Bills.
But I think my concern with the Lions is team building. They already had three running backs on the roster at that time. Yeah. Like getting rid of Jondris, getting rid of Swift reeks of desperation. They got like a fourth round 2025 pick for him. It's like almost comes across that you don't know what you're doing when this happens, and that's not good.
They
picked up David Montgomery in free agency.
I think someone like Ben Jones can manufacture yards with the running backs he already had. I don't think the running game was the problem.
No.
I certainly think the secondary was the problem. And
I
think
do as
certainly
well.
If they'd sat there at 6, while they wouldn't have got Devon Witherspoon, they would have got Christian Gonzalez.
Well, they moved down as well, didn't they? So they moved down to 12, didn't they? Yeah. And then, even at 12, they could have picked up Christian Gonzalez.
I have a feeling that they moved down from 6 to 12 to get Gibbs because Witherspoon.
Possibly, yeah.
Anyway, that's my sense. And I get that feeling that they weren't that enamored with Gonzalez enough to say, well, look, if it's him or Jahmyr Gibbs, we pick Jahmyr Gibbs. But it was a real head scratcher. And then Jack Campbell at 14, I'm convinced he would have been there at like in the second round.
Like, if the Bears are going to get criticism for picking up Edmonds in free agency, the Lions definitely deserve criticism for picking up Jack Campbell that early in the draft as well. It's just not...
he would still have been there at pick 32. He'd been there in the second round. They'd traded up in the second to get him. They felt that strongly about.
And we're not going to know whether he's any good for a couple of years because linebacker. Like, and that's
because
just how it works. Yeah.
Hashtag linebacker.
Yeah.
I think what you said earlier about if you rearrange like the first four picks they make, it
that's all
actually
right.
makes sense.
Yeah.
It actually looks fine because if you'd said to me that they traded back to 12 and 14 and 12 and 14 they had picked, you know, say Brian Branch at 12 and Sam Laporta at 14, I'd have gone, ooh, Sam Laporta, that's quite high. But I wouldn't have had a problem with them picking Brian Branch at 12.
No.
But they got Brian Branch much later. So well done them. Their second round was great. It was really good. They got really good value and they got good players. I think it was a head scratcher that they had Michael Mayer sitting there and Sam Laporta, and they went, you know what, we'll pick Sam Laporta.
It is. I mean, I
Michael
like Sam
Mayer.
Laporta, but like, yeah.
So do I. So do I. Not as much as I like Michael Mayer.
No.
And how he would have fit on a Ben Jones offense. So again, still a head scratcher, but their round two picks were good. They were really good value as well, and I didn't have an issue. So that was fine. And then the Patriots just happened to have like Christian Gonzalez fall into their lap. Now, of all the landing spots for him to land in, that's perfect. Absolutely perfect, because Bill gets his Stephon Gilmore in the wings.
Not to mention how they manufactured that happening as well,
I know.
Which is letting the Steelers move up to pick the player the Jets wanted, and then still end up landing the player they would have picked anyway.
Because the Jets weren't going to pick Christian Gonzalez because corner isn't really a problem.
No.
It's spectacular, isn't it? I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, some teams were just smart because they did nothing.
Yeah.
Which I always think is hilarious when you think about that. I think the Eagles basically drafting the University of Georgia defense from 2021 and continuing to do that the second year in a row is fine. I like it. I love the fact that they got Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, but far less than they should have cost in terms of capital.
So I have a theory on the Jalen Carter thing, which is that the Eagles, it's fine for them to take Jalen Carter because if it doesn't pan out, who cares? They've got a ton of talent anyway.
Yeah, you've still got Jordan Davis as part of your succession plan. You still have Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham playing at a high level. But Brandon Graham's coming off his best, most productive season.
You're going to be fine. So you're probably the team that's in the best position to draft Jalen Carter anyway.
And if Nolan Smith doesn't work out, you just go back to plan A, which was Hassan Reddick, who's basically the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, but it makes sense that you just fill that defensive front seven with more talent.
Yeah. I thought the Eagles just
yeah.
They seem to know their role in the league, which is that they've got a ton of talent, so it doesn't really matter too much who they draft. So they might as well go for the high upside players.
Yeah. And they could have picked anyone, and I would have actually been fine with the pick. As long as they didn't pick a quarterback, I wouldn't have laughed at them. So, you know, you can kind of say, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, even moving up to pick Kelee Ringo as well, I think it's a decent pick.
Where they got him, it's good value. It's just, I just still can't get over how stiff he is and how linear he is as a corner. And
they also gave up a lot to go up there to get him as well.
Yeah, but I think maybe they have a plan.
Yeah, I also think they don't care. So, you know. I think
so
it's,
two,
yeah.
Yeah. So, two things that can also be true, by the way.
Yeah.
That drafting Jahmyr Gibbs at 12 is bad value.
Yeah.
Because he's a running back.
Yeah.
But Arthur Smith going to get Bijan Robinson at 8 is good value.
Yes.
I like it.
I don't.
I've said I like it. I'm fine with it.
I don't dislike it. Judging by what Pete Skoronski was saying, they had no interest in drafting an offensive lineman by the sounds of things. So, if you're not drafting O-line, then yeah, I like it. I do wonder whether an offensive line would be better for your run game in general. an offensive lineman would be better for your run game in general rather than a running back. But I mean, he is an incredibly talented back.
So. Yes. They did go offensive line. Let me just get it up. They went picked. Actually, gosh, where's my memory? Hold on, I'm just opening it up now. Yeah, they got Matthew Bergeron, so the tackle out of Syracuse. So if you're drafting him to play tackle, yeah. But he translates to being a decent guard potentially at the next level.
Mm.
Okay. 6'5", 318. And he's just, you know, he has that ability to, I mean, I'm sure they'll try him at guard, but he's most likely going to a tackle, but he's most likely to kick inside and maybe end up starting alongside Chris Lindstrom.
A tackle, they've still got Jake Matthews and Caleb McGarry, to be fair.
Yeah, it's not quite the running sword that you first assume, actually. And you think, it's kind of like when you look at the Texans one, you think, it's not amazing, but do you know what? I can think of 7 or 8 offensive lines that are worse. So, you know. Bucks, sorry.
yeah.
Sorry, more on that later. So I don't mind going Bijan Robinson because they went Matthew Bergeron in round two. Mm-hmm. So I've not got a massive issue with that.
They didn't do the Packers thing of going, right, well, just for that, we're not going to take this position now, just to constantly zag while everyone's zigging. They still addressed the issue. Don't get me wrong, there is definitely still issues on that offensive line, but I don't think they're going to win the league this year.
Mm.
So
no, I don't think they do either.
Why not, eh? Why not just try and get the player, the best player you can in, and then build around it? Because they still need a quarterback, really. Unless they think Desmond Ridder really is going to be the guy, which I don't think they do, if I'm honest.
Well, they'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Head scratchers, I think Quentin Johnston for the Chargers, you would assume it makes sense. I don't think it does. I don't see that there's an awful lot of difference between him and Mike Williams, except for the fact that Mike Williams is actually good at contested catches.
I kind of agree. Like, I think that was a weird one.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the player they needed. Yeah.
No, I don't think he is either. Conversely, I think the Jordan Addison pick, picking him in the 20s would be a little bit rich for me, unless he did go to Minnesota.
Mm.
In which case, I'm totally fine with it because I think it's a good landing spot for him.
They've got a very specific need at
and he fits it quite nicely, I think. I really, really like that. The Bills picking Dalton Kincaid would be pawn if they had a fully functioning offensive line. More on that later. So that was a head scratcher for me. But again, I think the only tackles left on the board at that point were, I think, Anton Harrison and Matt Bergeron. And obviously they didn't think highly enough of those guys.
No, I agree.
I really like the Cowboys picking Mazi Smith because he is like, they need to fix that run defense. And he is the one guy that I think would do it.
He's the one guy that just kind of instantly comes in and goes, there we go. That's actually going to go a long way to be fixed. Yeah.
Bang on. I really, really liked, actually. I think Kalijah Kansi going at 19 would have felt early, but I like the fact that he went to the Bucks.
Yeah, me too. It's a really good landing spot.
Yeah.
Because he gets the lineup next to Vita Vea.
Two more different players you could not hope to witness. Can you imagine watching that defensive line? You look at Vita Vea and then you look at Kalijah Kansi, and they're both two physically very different people.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, if Kalijah Kansi strapped Jordan Addison onto his back like a rucksack, got on the scales, he'd weigh a little bit less than Vita Vea.
Is Kansi going to be playing three tech?
I'm assuming that he's going to be packaged specific in year one. I think he's going to be passing downs only as a three tech. He might be an edge in some of the heavier packages, I don't know, but because of his size. I mean, a lot was made of the fact that he didn't beat many double teams, but you know what, his size, he stalemated loads of double teams, and that counts for a lot when you're 280 pounds. So there's some evidence there that his place with isn't that much of a problem. And he's an elite gap shooter.
Yeah, I think that is a really nice pick and a great landing spot for him as well.
Yeah, could not agree more.
For a team that didn't have a ton of draft picks, I think the Rams did really well.
Oh, their first pick was amazing. I couldn't have thought of better value where they picked Steve Avila.
Yeah.
Just like, there are dudes who are born to play guard, and Steve Avila is someone who is born to play guard.
Yeah. They don't have a ton of cap space, so they went and addressed a ton of needs at pretty much every round. They drafted so sensibly. This was a fairly typical Rams draft. Nothing in the first round, but every other round where they pick players that are probably actually going to have an effect on the team.
I think they've got something like about 17 undrafted free agents as well.
Yeah.
So it's like literally like just insane. Yeah. McVay just doing tryouts for absolutely anybody with a pulse.
Yeah. So like,
but that's what you want to do.
Stetson Bennett as a backup, I think is a nice move.
The only issue I have with that is they picked him like 100 picks higher than he should have gone.
I agree. But also, he's still going to be cheaper than any other backup alternative they could have gone for.
That's a fair point. Stetson Bennett is older than Jalen Hurts.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
He's the same age as Sam Darnold.
Mm. Which is crazy, to be fair. That is bonkers. Early bets for Byron Young to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. For having the privilege of lining up next to Aaron Donald.
I mean, it
makes your life a lot easier.
It does. I mean, I couldn't think of a better running mate to have.
Yeah.
So there were a bunch of picks that things that threw me and some things that sort of confirmed some stuff for me. So I think there's a small group of people who have watched quarterbacks this year.
Yeah.
Who thought the same way I did, that there was the three and then QB4. The gap between three and four was bigger than most people thought.
I agree.
In the league. And I thought the gap between Richardson and Levis was much bigger than most people's. And it turns out that everyone in the NFL thought the same.
Yeah.
So there's whispers, actually, that he fell, not even because of play. It was personality.
I've heard that he did not interview very well.
Yeah. And the team were not massively impressed with the way he handled his social media.
Yeah.
And they run up to the draft.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, and just like that, here's lots of pictures of me looking really jacked. Aren't I awesome? Sort of, you expect something a bit less sort of, from a future franchise quarterback.
I think it's a great landing spot, though. Like, for Will Levis. I don't love him, but at the same time, he gets to line up with Derrick Henry behind him at least for a little bit longer. I think the Titans have massive problems at receiver. But the offensive line's decent. They're going to run the ball a ton.
Yeah.
Skoronski's gone there as well, which is a great pickup as well, I think.
I could not fault that.
No.
Could not fault that.
Great lad.
I couldn't think of a more Titans-y offensive lineman for them to pick, apart from possibly Steve Avila.
Yeah. and Andre Dillard, Brunskills, they picked up as well, Nicholas Petit-Frere. It's just generally quite a good offensive line. It feels like the AFC South is just made up of okay offensive lines now. Except for the Jets.
Sometimes okay is good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
If you have five okay offensive linemen, you sometimes end up having a good offensive line.
I think the Titans need to look at potentially bringing a free agent receiver in. I don't know who's available, or maybe trading for someone that's unhappy with the draft picks or whatever. Finding someone to come in and help them on offense.
Not a lot there.
Really isn't. Hasn't been all year. Receiver has been insanely hard to find this year.
I mean, they picked up Ty J. Spears as well, and Ty J. Spears is one of those the running backs from the class that I really like. So it wasn't too bad a draft from the Titans. But Will Levis falling where he did kind of confirms that, I think he's more of a project than Anthony Richardson in terms of his ability to immediately set foot on an NFL field and have an impact.
Yeah. I think it's a decent landing spot, though, but yeah.
Yeah, quite like the Bengals bagging Miles Murphy at 28. Doesn't have to be the guy straight away.
Yeah, that's a decent landing spot as well.
Yeah, and the Saints sort of falling into Brian Brzee, you know, that could pan out quite nicely for them. You know, if you can unlock that hashtag upside. One of my favourite picks, and this is basically the Dolphins just trolling everybody.
Yeah.
They picked Devon Achane.
Yeah.
They just have a track team now. I mean, literally, if Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and Devon Achane line up and ran a 40-yard dash, I'm not convinced who would win.
Didn't they work out that Jalen Waddle's of like the main receivers and running backs, Jalen Waddle's the slowest?
He's the slowest, and then there's Raheem Mostert as well, who's not slow.
He's a burner. Yeah.
So what they've gone is for speed, speed, glorious speed.
Yeah.
Do you know what they haven't done?
What?
Offensive line.
No, how many teams are ignoring offensive line this year, though?
But them ignoring it is most jarring of all.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, though, because the Bears didn't ignore it. So if every other team wants to go ahead and ignore offensive line, the Bears are quite happy to capitalize.
Yeah, but your
on
quarterback
that.
Wasn't concussed multiple times last year.
No, because you know.
To the point where they potentially may be considered retiring.
That is a really good point. I didn't even think about it like that.
And there is the two are non. arm of the fan base definitely made their opinions heard.
Yeah.
And I kind of with them.
Yeah, me too.
They were one of the worst pass blocking units in the NFL last year on true pass sets.
Yeah.
They were just not good. Outside of Teron Armstead, their guards were horrendous.
And Teron Armstead was barely on the field last year, or was it the year before? Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't his best year either.
Yeah.
Liam Eikenberg was, oh gosh, I expected a lot more from Liam Eikenberg in year two. Yeah. And it did not get any better. He was bad.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Which is surprising considering that he was somebody who at least projected to be a vaguely competent guard.
It's just,
if not a tackle.
So strange, isn't it? Because they're so close to being like a real, actual potential challenger. And it's not like... I don't know.
A lot of smoke and mirrors going to have to happen.
I suppose by the time they got round to drafting, because, you know, they got a draft pick removed, that there wasn't the players that they necessarily wanted on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Do something in free agency then.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a lot in free agency, Dan. We'll get to that later.
But it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be like the best offensive line. It just needs to be better than it was.
There are serviceable tackles and guards available.
Mm. And there were as well at the start of free agency as well. So
there still kind of are.
Mm.
So it's not all is not lost. Quite like the Bears draft.
I did as well. Like I was reasonably chuffed with that. Like
I
it's okay if you don't want to commit to Jalen Carter, then don't commit to Jalen Carter, that's fine. Find a position of need like right tackle and fill it.
Problem solved. Darnell Wright is born to play right tackle, not left, but right.
Roshon Johnson as well in the fourth.
Yeah. Really good value getting him. Yeah. I think, you know, second fiddle to Bijan, but he projects to be somebody who could be a decent starting running back.
You know? Tyreek Stevenson in the second as well.
Good again.
Yeah.
Decent value as well. So the Bears sort of handled that draft extremely well. Mm. Really pleased with that.
And I'm just going to add in Noah Sewell in the fifth round. That's about right. Like
now, so but you've got like one of the best value wide receiver picks.
Yeah, Tyler Scott.
Tyler Scott.
Yeah,
that's really amazing value, and he gives you something that you didn't have.
Yeah,
just speed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we kind of did. We had Velus Jones, who coughed up the ball pretty much every single time.
Not the same.
No, not at all. Not at all.
He said, holding his head in his hands, shaking very hard. Also, Velus Jones is 40.
He is, and also Velus Jones. If you're listening, I am sorry, and I don't really mean this, but he did pretty much single-handedly lose us like two games last year by like literally in the last minute coughing the ball up.
Well, I think he did it double-handedly. if I remember correctly, on both occasions. I think two hands, even two hands wasn't enough. Sorry. Anyway, yeah, so that was, so the draft was sort of, I really liked it, and there were lots of players that were picked that I think this discussion moves us quite nicely into one of our questions, actually. We got a question from Phil, didn't we?
Yeah.
Which
As
I
I
thought
frantically look it up, yeah.
was kind of the most interesting thing about this draft. And the question illuminates what is interesting about this draft.
Okay, which draft picks are most likely to have an immediate impact? That's what Phil
So
said.
it's really weird. If you look at all the best players in this draft, okay, if you were to list like the top 20 players in this draft based purely on talent, there's a large percentage of them not on that list of players who could have an immediate impact. Now, for me, if I were to sort of rank them based on the impact I think they're going to have, I think I kind of knocked up a little list just before we came on. So let me just get it up. When I say knocked up, I actually spent 2 hours going, So, okay. Obviously, I think Will Anderson's going to have a massive impact, and that's an obvious one. I also think that Bijan Robinson is going to be transformative for the Arthur Smith offense. But if you're talking about players that immediately change a whole position group in a really meaningful way, I think Brian Branch going to Detroit, he could be massive because of the impact he has in the box, not just as a pass defender, but as support in the running game. He fits the run really well. He's a really solid, savage coverage defender, a really solid fundamental tackler, really, really disciplined player who knows what's going on and around the field. So he feels like somebody who could be really. I think Sam Laporta is also going to be a valuable contributor in that offense, particularly if you aren't going to be having Jameson Williams. I think it's going to be more of the same, but I think Laporta is going to be the guy that ends up being receiver two if Williams has gone for longer than 6 games. Jordan Addison, I think he's going to have a big impact on that
Yeah,
Vikings offense.
I agree.
Devon Witherspoon and Jaxon Smith-Njigba for the Seahawks, they're both going to be massive contributors year one. Michael Mayer for the Raiders is going to have, he's basically got to replace Darren Waller, but in a different way. He's a very different player. He's much boring, but they're going to use, Daniels is going to want to use him the way he was using Gronkowski. Pass catching and as a movable piece in the running game. So he's going to be used to play to his strengths. And I actually like him landing at the Raiders for that reason. Not as much as I would like him landing at the Lions, but there you go. I think Miles Murphy is going to have an immediate impact as well. He's going to add some juice to that pass rush in Cincinnati. That's going to be a big one. Steve Avila is definitely on my list as well. Fits right in. And while I'm annoyed with the Bills for not taking an offensive lineman in round one, I do love the fact that they got my favorite guard, Osiris Torrence, who basically is the strongest human in the interior O-line class in round two. So I think he's going to be a massive addition. Devon Achane, I've already mentioned for Miami, he is going to be a nightmare. Tank Dell for the Texans, underrated one as well. Jordan Battle for the Bengals. I think he's going to be a player who's going to see a lot of playing time. He's going to have a massive impact. I think Tyler Scott and Roshon Johnson. Safety Antonio Johnson, the Jags as well. I think he'll play. And don't be surprised if Xavier Hutchinson for the Texans also finds his way into kind of the rookies who surprised us a bit. John Michael Smith. Sorry?
Luke Schoonmaker as well.
Luke Schoonmaker. Luke Musgrave to the Packers. I think Jordan Love and Luke Musgrave are going to fall in love. Who else have I not? John Michael Smith to the Giants as well. Don't underestimate the impact he will have on that line. He's a really good player. I think my bet for the one that is most transformative is potentially going to be Bijan Robinson or
Interesting.
Brian Branch. I genuinely think Brian Branch is that good a football player.
It too obvious to say Bryce Young?
I think the quarterback that will have the most impact is going to be Bryce Young. I just that
Yeah, I agree.
he has the one trait none of them have, which is that elite otherworldly sort of vision and field awareness
Yeah.
that translates. Because that's where rookies normally fall apart, their vision.
Yeah, I agree.
Early on, I think he will be the one that has the quarterback that has the most immediate impact. I think you might find that Anthony Richardson finishes strong.
Yep, I agree.
And Stroud might finish strong as well.
So yeah, really interesting question. Yeah.
Oh gosh, and the final one actually that missed off my list, but actually that should have been first on my list. Deep breath, Hendon Hooker.
Interesting.
If that Detroit offense bogs down, for whatever reason, don't be surprised if they turn to him. And don't be
No.
surprised if it's interesting. And don't be surprised if it's a completely different aspect of the game.
They have options, is the point.
They do. Don't underestimate Hendon Hooker being QB2 in Detroit or QB3 and the impact that might have week 9 onwards if they get into a funk.
Yeah. Okay. Got some things from Will.
Yes.
Dear Grand Gentlemen, I was very concerned with the level of interest in the Buffalo Bills paid their offensive line during the offseason. Does Brandon Bean really expect fans to be satisfied with the signing Dave Quisenberry and drafting a guard to fix one of the most overrated units in the whole league? Josh Allen's ability to evade rushes covers up a multitude of offensive line sins, but it simply is not sustainable. Why, oh why, would Bills fans put up with this?
They shouldn't, is the answer. I think the Bills should have been aggressive. I think they should have traded up to get themselves a tackle.
Yeah, because they were offensive linemen out there. And sometimes they were picked by teams that just wanted to pick a really decent player. So yeah.
There are, even if they had gone and got Skoronski, who projects to be a guard, you still pick a guy who projects to be somebody you can try at tackle.
Yeah.
I like the Osiris Torrance pick. I would have liked it more had they actually picked a tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, there were four or five you could have picked, and I think you could have been right with any one of them, really, and it would have been okay because actually your team's not terrible.
Yeah.
But it's on the verge of collapsing on itself if you can't move that offensive line forward. We
Yeah,
saw it
they
last year. We saw it. We played hurt.
started strong and then
Yeah.
I don't really get the Dalton Kincaid pickup.
I think they are very aware that their wide receiver twos are a steaming pile of twos.
Yeah.
And they just want someone else. And I can
Yeah. This
understand them
team
wanting a
does seem thinner
yeah.
than last year, doesn't it?
If they had any other quarterback, you'd be a bit concerned by their offense.
Yeah.
Except for wide receiver one.
Yeah. But even
But
he's now like
yeah.
on the cusp of, I don't know.
He's old.
Yeah.
He's going to retire soon.
Yeah. Gabe Davis is
They
good
need to
though.
have. But not. But he's not going to stop
Not
Josh
number
Allen
one. Yeah.
getting hurt.
No. No, that's the problem.
And he's not going to generate a running game that's consistent week to week either.
No.
And they do need to do both things to preserve his longevity. They won't win a Super Bowl with an offensive line like that
Yeah.
or a running game that performs like that. They will
No.
be the bridesmaids year after year if they can't. So, yeah, I think Bills fans should be furious.
Kind of agree. It just feels like, sorry, Kincaid feels like a bit of a luxury pick.
Go get Darnell Wright. Pick Osiris Torrance.
Mean, don't get
And then
Darnell Wright.
anything else you do, well, or Paris Johnson.
Yeah.
Or Skoronski and Torrance. And you're like, okay, you've invested some serious shit here. Everything else you pick after this, we're totally fine with this because you have done two picks that have made everyone happy.
Yeah.
including Josh Allen's mum. He doesn't want to see her boy getting the crud kicked out of him. He's a big lad, but even big lads, you know, big lads break bones, yeah?
Will's next statement or question. Does Gridiron Gentleman, dear, oh good Lord, we're off to a flyer. Dear Gridiron Gentleman, I was very pleased to see the Panthers select Bryce Young at the top of the 2023 draft. However, I am concerned that the interior of the Panthers offensive line is ill-suited to protecting him. Young is an incredible athlete. However, this stature means the quickest way to reduce the size of throwing lanes is collapsing the interior of the offensive line. It's no coincidence that Drew Brees' greatest years came when Saints invested heavily at guard. I don't think picking a 24-year-old guard with back issues in the fourth round is going to cut it.
Spot
Yeah.
on. So it's been said, and I heard it, and I immediately winced a little. And I said that when I can't remember who it was said, "Oh, the Panthers' offensive line isn't that bad." Well, it is and it isn't. It's a pretty good run blocking unit,
Yeah.
not a great pass blocking unit,
And it's
not
good on the
really.
outside. I don't love it on the inside. So
No.
my concern is with the Panthers that at least in recent years, rushing quarterbacks, their favorite move is take advantage of how wide defenses line up
Yeah.
and run up the middle. So you've got Bryce Young, he's just a little guy, and you've got not incredible guards. Which means that the pocket starts to collapse, clear gap up the middle. You've got guards who are doing a reasonable job until you start running, and then all of a sudden you've got a 300-pound interior defensive lineman like bringing you down to the ground.
Exactly. So with an offensive line, if you have bad tackles, it's a problem. And it is a problem. But if you have bad tackles but a relatively solid interior, you can step up into the pocket because, you know, you can step up away from pressure by moving forwards in the pocket, in a pocket that is stable
You'd
in
also get
the
more
middle.
help from tight ends as well on the outside.
You know, you can step up away from that pressure, and that buys you some time to make the throw. If it's through the A and B gap, you've got to do some crazy stuff. You've got to escape, you've got to run, it cuts the field in half as soon as you leave the pocket. Whichever side you come out of that pocket, your field is cut in half, unless you are Patrick frickin' Mahomes. And even then, you're limited. Because the moment you go into scramble drill and roll right, everyone starts moving right.
Why is no
So
one paying
even if you're
attention to what the Eagles have done the last couple of years? Not the Eagles. Yeah, actually the Eagles and the Chiefs. Why is no one paying attention to what they've done the last couple of years?
No, I know, I wholeheartedly agree.
Because it's working. I was unsure, but it is working now.
No, they're picking the right players to do the right thing. It's really good. But
Dick.
the concern for me that makes it even worse is the fact that Bryce Young has a longer drop than most quarterbacks because he is short. He drops further back in the pocket. His steps are more elongated when he drops back because his launch point needs to be further back so that he can see.
And not
You
just
know?
that, just get the ball to the high point
Yeah.
faster, like sooner.
And when you drop, the further back you drop, the more it forces your offensive line to fan out in a wider perimeter. So if you don't have rock solid center and guard play, there's not that space to step up because your tackles are going to be stressed by the width pocket they have to create. So it could be a huge problem. Bryce Young is an elite problem solver under pressure.
And
Let's see how
Bryce
this
Young was
works.
still the right move as well.
I think of all the quarterbacks they could have picked for that scenario, he's perfect. If he doesn't get knocked out.
Is a concern.
Which is the risk. But yeah, I'm absolutely fine with Bryce Young. He was my favourite quarterback by a mile, but the Panthers, yeah, they need to have a plan. Do we have any other questions? Any other visitors to
Dear
the O2
gridiron
Britain?
gentlemen, who is playing tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Tristan Wirfs, and I'd love to know. If you go by our lads, it's Luke Gedecky. So there was
Wow.
Matt Filer. No,
Yeah.
I'm looking at the wrong, but yeah, no, yeah, that's right.
Left tackle, I'm assuming. Haven't any field, obviously, because Tristan Wirfs is a right tackle, and moving him to left tackle is not necessarily the answer. Doesn't always work. So left
He's so good at
tackles.
right tackle as well.
Because but he's a right tackle. So free agent left tackles. Taylor Lewan.
Not bad shout.
George Fant.
Who do you think Tom Brady would like the most?
Sure.
He's coming back, isn't he?
Wait, I don't know.
He's realised he might have to share a spotlight with JJ Watt.
Oh, God. Oh, I quite like them both, actually. It's just I don't
Me
want them
too.
to come back. I
Yeah.
think it's, you know, showtime.
I think it's the
Let
right
someone
time.
else do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the right time.
The NFC
So,
has
yeah,
got
George.
so many good quarterbacks. So, like, you know, just let everyone else have a go.
So, Taylor Lewan,
Yeah.
George Fant,
Yeah.
let me be your fantasy.
Yeah.
Eric Fisher,
Yeah. Okay.
Chris Hubbard,
Okay.
Juwan James,
Okay. We've clearly hit a level of
Jason
quality.
Peters, although, you know,
He's 400 years old. Yeah.
Ty Nsekhe, Dan Skipper, that's it. That's all that's left.
Yeah, I would imagine you're offering someone some serious money, like another team. Can we have your left tackle, please?
I have a funny feeling it's going to be Eric Fisher.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling as well. That'd be good for both games
Lewan,
he
I don't
plays.
know. He's not the same player.
No.
George Fant is the same player, and that's the problem.
Yes,
Chris
that
Hubbard's
is a
Chris
problem.
Hubbard. Juwan
Yeah.
James is Juwan James. Jason Peters is
Yeah.
old. And Ty Nsekhe is Ty Nsekhe. Dan Skipper is someone I've never heard of. So yeah, there we go.
Last one then.
Yeah, far away.
Dear gridiron gentlemen, is it legal to show the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line pre-watershed?
I think it's illegal to show either Philadelphia Eagles trench pre-watershed, and some of those games should be on the premium content of their
Yeah,
own events,
these
I
ones you're
think.
going to need a password for, definitely.
You will need a password and a monthly subscription.
Yeah. But just in case
Particularly
you're
any.
wondering, Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson, Jason Kelsey, Cam Jurgens, Lane Johnson.
Is Sir Marlowe still on the roster?
No, he got released, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's sickening, isn't it?
It's not fair. Here's the thing, we let them do this every year.
But it is because the
Yeah.
league allowed them to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to stop the Eagles drafting really, really good players in the trenches,
Draft them before they do.
just
Yeah.
do it. Just, you know, make a point of doing it. I
Yeah.
mean, I don't know how often a team can be really, really good but still be picking high enough to get really good players.
Because the New Orleans Saints keep doing deals with them. Like, it's just stop it.
Yeah. So I mean, it was at the point where they could let Andre Dillard go and not really care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
It made no difference.
it's no secret that
Yeah.
in both trenches, they just have a clear succession plan of players that are either ridiculously physically gifted or ridiculously fundamentally sound or ridiculously elite at
Yeah.
one or two things, and then they just develop them really, really well.
I agree.
Jordan
Definitely.
Mailata for any other team would not have developed that way. I
No,
guarantee it.
Jordan Mailata is a one in a million player. That
Isaac
should
Sir
not
Marlowe
happen. Yeah.
shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Big V shouldn't have happened.
No.
But the development that's there for those players and the way that the elder statesmen on that offensive line, the Kelseys and the Lane Johnsons, and the way that they help to bring those players along is evident.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I agree.
because it's different coaching staff. It's the elder statesman of those lines that is there and in place to help those guys acclimatize, and that's worth a lot. There was a really good podcast with I think it was Mitchell Schwartz and I forgot the name, Rob Havenstein, I think.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how offensive line coaching is massively important for rookies, and how that can really, really help or hinder a guy,
Yeah.
regardless of how talented they are. But also, the support you get from the older players in the room as well can be absolutely invaluable. And they said that it nowhere is it more magnified than on the offensive line,
Yeah, it makes sense.
because
You live in each other's pocket.
And they also said that offensive line coaches can be some of the most my way or the highway guys you'll come across. Like, they would tell stories of certain offensive line coaches who would coach players to do things because they wanted them done that way, regardless of whether it actually suited that player's skill set or not. Then the really good ones are just the guys that see what's in front of them, work with the clay,
To put the best
and
five players in the field at any one time.
And accentuate the positive and tweak the negative.
Agreed. I think on that note, we might call it a night.
I think so. The draft has been has had a bow tied to it.
Yeah.
Just
Weird one.
parting shots and remarks. I've had a few days to have a brief look at next year's draft class.
Yeah.
Kids, it's going to be fun.
So one of the me and
It's
James
gonna
after
be fun.
we after this year's draft, I think that especially me, I can't speak for you, James, but like I didn't put everything felt a bit rushed for me this year for like for no fault of my own, like I just didn't have any spare time to do it. I would like next
It was a
year,
slog. It was a hard, but it was also a difficult year to do because there was so much talent that was not. Like I said, there was 130 guys who were all round 2 to 4.
So whatever happens this year coming, I think the agreement is that me and James might start a little bit earlier.
I will normally start sort of August. I started yesterday.
And I think we're going to get more as many people involved as possible. And I think the idea is that as soon as the Super Bowl's over, it's boom, draft. Like we've already had this prepared. We're just going to get straight into it so we can actually spend some time. Maybe do like top 10 players rather than top five players or something like that at each position and stuff like that. It's a work in progress, and it's one of those things that like if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I'm quite happy to share it on the podcast, like with all the people that listen, because I know they're good people and they won't mind one way or another. But the plan is to really kind of go for it next season, in terms of the
And I think
draft.
next year's class is going to be a spectacular class of quarterbacks. I think you've got the top two, Drake May and Caleb Williams, but I also think there's two or three quarterbacks on top of that who are guys who could easily be first round picks, and there's a few guys that will be second round picks as well. And then you've got guys who are those second round picks who could easily turn it around next year and be first round players like Quinn Ewers, Spencer Rattler. I think Michael Penix Jr. is going to fit into the first round. Bo Nix of Oregon could come on as well. I think there's a lot of potential for a lot of players to do really, really well next year and get drafted quite highly. It could be one of those classes that has a lot of guys going quite high. The receiver class, I can see six or seven guys who I think I would have first round grades on already. I mean, beyond Marvin Harrison Jr., players like Malik Nabers, I mean, that guy is just a yards after catch monster. And then Emeka Egbuka as well, who is like at Ohio State, is also just another high quality wide receiver that just looks like he translates to the NFL. It's a good class. Edge is good. Linebacker is good.
Going to be a fun draft next year.
Running back and tight end, not so much. But the number one tight end next year, better than any tight end this year.
Is crazy,
Definitely.
considering how many good tight ends there have been.
Ladies and gentlemen, if Darnell Washington is your tight end two, it means your tight end one is a bad, bad man. Brock Bowers is a bad, bad man.
Yeah, so I think if more than anything, can't wait to get into it, really.
It's very exciting.
Agreed. Right, I think we're going to call it a night. If you want to contact us, hit us up on Twitter. It's just at Gridiron Gents. Come join the Discord. It's the pinned tweet on our Twitter. It's fairly straightforward. And if you want to email us, hellochaps@gridirongentlemen.com. I think there's a very good chance we might have a week off next week and then come back strong and start looking at the individual teams, maybe. Or maybe start looking at some more, I don't know, in-depth things. Some fun things to look at. But we'll have a discussion over the next couple of weeks as to what we're going to do. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Thank you, James. Excellent work as always.
Thank you, Dan.
Back.
Thank you, Dan, for having me on every time.
Always. Anytime, James. Back very soon. I can't say next week, but if not next week, then the week after. Thank you and goodbye.